much you want to bet?
I don't bet.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-1 odds.
Nope.
5-1.
Nope.
10-1.
You're on.
And the Bet the Board podcast is back after a 1-week unplanned hiatus. We apologize to everyone who didn't get to hear our lovely voices for the divisional playoff round. Payne, I just want to know, do you have anything to say for yourself in defense of our technical malfunction?
Well, it wasn't our fault. That's the first thing. And the second thing, as much as I love providing 60 minutes of free content to all the loyal listeners, we definitely recorded a podcast, and it was probably our longest of the season. Had some good tidbits in there, and at the end of recording, poof, gone. So,
simply amazing that that was the case. You know, we finally record a longer podcast, as a lot of people have been listening for. And because we're honest on this thing, for full disclosure, we would have shared two positions with you, one which was a winner and the other which came up a bit short. Carolina first half under definitely caught our attention, along with the Dallas Cowboys, a live underdog, although that one got a little bit sticky late in the game against the Pack.
Yeah, and then you, I believe you forced me to give out a bet on the national
championship game. I forced. Here we go. I forced you.
Ohio State, runaway winner. That was a nice one.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely the one that we wanted to make sure we shared. I know a lot of people had questions about the national championship. But bottom line is all of that is in the past, and we have two very interesting games to focus on for this weekend. For those folks new to the podcast, your co-host, Todd Furman, you can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. And the other gentleman down there in South Florida, you can follow him on Twitter as well, at Payne Insider. And Payne, we may as well start with the early game featuring the defending champions against the Green Bay Packers. Seattle, we'll call them a seven-and-a-half-point favorite right now. You have to lay a little bit if you want to try and back the Pack here with that hook. Total in this game, 46.5, seeming to trend towards the under. Not sure where we want to start with this one, whether it's Aaron Rodgers' injury, whether it's the difference in line we see from week one to where we're at this point in the season. So I'll let you lead, and we'll take it from there, my friend.
Yeah, I think of the two games, this one is probably the more interesting of the games to talk about. I think a lot of the angles and elements that you can break down that you kind of touched on, and I heard the same thing all week. It was Green Bay. They were a 4.5-point dog to open the season. How could they possibly be catching 7.5 now? I talked to one big sports book operator for one of the most respected sports books, and they had trouble opening this line. And if you follow the markets where they open, this specific sports book typically opens first, and they didn't this time. And it was based on, obviously, Aaron Rodgers. They were very unaware of where to open this and set the market, so to speak. And I think probably if you said he was 100%, you're looking at where the opening line was of the week one game, in that 6 range. But a lot of things that differ in this game than the first one, and we've talked about, if you've listened to this podcast since, you know, the week one, we've talked about treating each game as its own entity. And so a lot of people that talk about, oh my God, this game closed 4.5, let's remember it opened 5.5, 6, peaked as high as 6.5, and a lot of the reasoning behind that was the one element, the championship element, the opening ceremony, so to speak. And no matter the sport, NHL, NBA, the championship team tends to not do so well on opening night. And I think that's an angle that people haven't looked at as to why that line closed where it did. You also had Russell Wilson, basically his little off-season parade where he was doing every single talk show. He was also going through a divorce. So I think that played a huge role in where that line closed. Obviously, the Packers were high in a lot of the group's power ratings to start the year. So a lot of that was in there. So I don't think that – I just think it's a bad way to gauge this game. I really think it's a horrible way to gauge the game in terms of where these lines opened and why they opened where they did. The next one, obviously, is Aaron Rodgers' health. And, Todd, I just want to get your idea on this. What you saw last week, where would you assess him? 60%, 70%?
I would say 70% might be a bit generous. And I know you and I have talked about it at great lengths. It's so much of it is the matchup. Dallas was unable to put pressure on him. Rodgers didn't have to scramble or do anything to get out of his comfort zone. But I would say, you know, 60 to 65%, and then you downgrade that because you don't have 2 weeks to prepare, can't go through the same level of treatment. And always the potential when you play on turf, it may not be as forgiving. If you plant funny on it, throw in potential elements. And I think you can't go into this game handicapping the Packers, assuming Rodgers is any better than 60%.
And last year, if you remember, we had these debates. What was he worth? And he missed like 8 weeks last season. And at first, you know, everyone on Twitter, the debate was, is he's worth 4 points? No, this guy had him worth 6 points. And all of a sudden, they lose six straight against the spread in 7 of 8. And now all of a sudden, towards the end of that run where he missed 8 games, the question mark was, is this guy worth 10 points? So now that, you know, you have this gauge, and basically that's where I assessed him. He's at about 70%, and the guy could be worth as much as 10 points, especially when you factor in the opponent. You know, I think it was a good open. I think 7, 7.5 is a decent open. I really did. I didn't think they could open this 5.5, 6, and we saw what Seattle did in a bad spot week one. So I didn't think the line was that off, and so everyone's running to bet Green Bay here. Seems like the public sentiment is looking that way a little bit too. Now, I can't disagree with it, but I disagree with it based upon the merits of even factoring in the first go around. The other thing I've heard is, you know, they've played there before. They know what's going on. Well, why doesn't every division opponent of theirs fare very well there? I mean, you know, that's a familiar environment. And I think when you break down this game a little bit, you had a Dallas team that, A, doesn't apply a lot of pressure, and B, they're not a blitzing team because they know how weak they are in the back half. So neither of those things really applied to last week, where Rodgers was able to just basically dance around the pocket, and there was number of times where he could have got outside the pocket and ran and just could not, and I don't think that's going to be the case this week. Seattle this year, obviously the defense and pressure-wise haven't been getting two quarterbacks a lot, but if you talk about their recent run at home, 15 sacks the last 4 home games. So they've been getting to the quarterback a lot recently, and I think that's going to play a huge role this week.
Now, the question I have for you, and we've seen some preliminary numbers on where Aaron Rodgers' props may open, and sometimes that can give us a good indication of how bookmakers truly feel about where he's at. Figure that this number in the 260 to 265 range, if we assume Rodgers at 100%, do we think this prop opens higher? Or does that number, in your estimation, Payne, indicate that he's going to be playing at a full level? Or maybe the Green Bay will be in comeback mode and he's going to have to throw the ball a lot more than Mike McCarthy and company would feel comfortable with?
Yeah, I mean, that seems pretty high if that's where it opens. Obviously, a much more, I would say, a better spot, obviously, last week. A much weaker defense, 2 weeks to prepare at home. He was very accurate, but what we saw was obviously not able to go downfield. And a lot of the downfield throws that he's had this year is being able to evade the pocket and create a mismatch downfield with Jordy Nelson. And one of the props that I wanted to look at last week was under 44.5 yards as his longest completion. Obviously, that would have went down in you know, huge smoke there on the Devontae Adams 46-yarder. But throughout the game, it was a lot of dink and dunk, and because he wasn't able to get outside the pocket, and because it was more of a quick, short passing game, I'm not sure how that number is going to come out this week. It'll be interesting to see where that number goes, where it officially opens, and where it moves from here. But that seems awfully high, unless they are in extreme comeback mode.
And I think that begs the interesting question is, of course, you know, not only for this weekend but towards the Super Bowl, you see some of the professionals start to do a lot more prop work. Eddie Lacy, over under receiving yards, 17.5. A little bit surprised with early indications. Jordy Nelson, 5.5 receptions. Seems a bit steep when you consider exactly what Green Bay may look to do against the Seattle defense. And then, of course, the other big question, will they throw in the general direction of Richard Sherman? Devontae Adams, over under pain for those curious. 32.5 yards receiving. I think he really has to be the X factor if Green Bay is going to be successful.
This will be interesting, is gauging the Seattle game plan and also how Green Bay reacts to it. Because if you remember last time, they initially started Jordy Nelson out on the side he likes, so to speak, and it was on Sherman, and they didn't throw that way. They moved him to the other side of the field. Sherman did not go with him. They actually never, ever attempted a throw towards Sherman, and it was basically dedicated towards the other side of the field. Even with Jordy shifting over there, They never sent Sherman against him, and he ended up having a decent game in the first week. So it's tough for me to gauge the receivers, where they're going to position them, and if Sherman's going to actually follow him around the field in a big game. Obviously, if Sherman's going to follow him, it's going to lead to good things for Davante Adams. But if he's not going to follow him, which he hasn't shown that he's going to leave a certain side of the field in the past, then they're just going to move Jordy over there, and basically Davante Adams is going to become basically just a decoy out on that other side of the field. I think really when you break this game down, you're going to need the Packers to have some semblance of a ground attack. As good as Seattle's defense has been this year, there has been some games where they've been able to allow some yardage on the ground. Obviously, last week was one of those big weeks against the Chiefs. They surrendered a lot of yards, so that's going to be the key here. And how healthy is Eddie Lacy? Obviously, he had the concussion the first go-round in this matchup. Not saying that that's going to be on his mind here, but you get popped one good time against a team, and it's in the back of your head. I would be really interested in seeing how Starks, what his prop numbers are at this week. Obviously, Lacy's got a knee injury. He's a little banged up. He's going to play, obviously, but that's the big thing, is finding out how banged up some of these guys are. And I think the biggest thing here for the Packers is being able to stop the run. That was one of the most biggest improvements they've made throughout the course of the season. First 8 weeks of the season allowed 154 rushing yards per game. Last 8 weeks of the regular season, just 87. But with 2 weeks to prepare against the Dallas Cowboys and basically loaded the box every single snap, they allowed 5.2 yards per carry. And it could have been much, much more with DeMarco Murray basically fumbling the ball in an easy touchdown. So that'll be an interesting thing to gauge here. Obviously, the weather, a big thing to gauge here as well. Looks like 15-mile-per-hour winds, and they're calling right now for about a 90% chance of rain. So a lot of things to kind of factor in this game when breaking it down.
Well, we're talking ground and pound. We're talking weather, and we've addressed the side. I don't think, you know, I can't speak for you. I don't really have a strong opinion on this number. A game that sets up quite nicely, maybe for a halftime wager or a potential something in play. But let's talk about the total. 46.5 for this game. All those elements, the championship-type atmosphere. You know, how do we go about beginning to try and attack this number? I actually think Green Bay is going to do what they need to try and stop the run and force Seattle and Russell Wilson to beat them through the air. As we saw against Carolina, yes, there were some big plays, but a lot of those were Russell Wilson extending drives on third down. He does have an NFL record, 74% completion record on third down. At the same time, if Green Bay can get them in third and longs consistently, I can make a strong case for this game being an under-type game. I mean, my numbers personally actually make it in the lower 40s, in that 43, 43.5 range.
Yeah, for me, that would be the only way I'm looking at this game is towards the under. Obviously, a little scary because I think last week Carolina was able to march down the field. They were pretty decent on offense. Cam Newton in the great turnover, basically, was what went on and why the defense looked better than it was last week. That was a little concerning to me. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to make the mistake that Cam Newton is going to make. So that scares me a little bit. That's the one thing that's kind of keeping me off this under. But looks like Byron Maxwell is going to be back and play opposite Richard Sherman. I know Simon came in last week and just got absolutely terrorized. But I think, again, this week the Packers are really going to have to employ ground and pound. I really do, because I think this is just a different beast. Now, the math number on this game that I got was, you know, 3.5. So I hate to go against that, but last thing I want to be doing here is holding a Packers ticket and watching this game unfold where Rodgers just cannot move at all, and this is not the Dallas defense. You know, he's not going to get away with the things that he got away with last week. A lot of high throws, a lot of inaccurate throws last week. So this is just really, really a tough game for me to gauge. But back to the total, for me it would be absolutely under or nothing in this game.
That's definitely the way that I would lean. And for those folks wondering, we're actually recording this podcast, I'm sure it'll be viral news. Cardale Jones actually making his announcement that he'll return to Ohio State. So he will not be the starting quarterback for any of the four teams that we'll discuss on this podcast.
Wow. Interesting.
A little bit surprising to call a press conference, put a target on your back to potentially be the backup quarterback in Columbus next year, but that's neither here nor there and won't help anybody on the podcast make some money. So we definitely agree with you that I think under makes the most sense here. Personally wanted a 24. Don't think that's obviously going to emerge in the market. Wouldn't be shocked if 23.5 start to evaporate pretty quickly. As it could trend that way, especially with some weather in the mix. Now, we look at the late game out on the East Coast, frigid temperatures, maybe not as cold as what we saw last weekend. New England, and we've seen some serious movement. We'll call them a 6.5-point favorite total on this one, 53.5, 54. Number opened at 7. See some books as low as 6. Where do we begin to go handicapping this one, knowing New England has absolutely destroyed the Colts in each of their last two meetings?
Yeah, and again, people aren't going to want to hear this, but this is an extremely tough game to handicap. The early professional money, obviously, on the Colts at this stage. You look at Chris, they're even dealing a 6 on this game. So there has been professional money on Indianapolis. Obviously, Andrew Luck is going to give them every opportunity to cash this ticket. It just is a matter of if we're going to get the same Indianapolis front four on defense this week, if we're going to get the same effort from their offensive line as they got last week. That, I mean, to me last week, Andrew Luck, he had a nice game, but it wasn't an Andrew Luck type game. I think he missed a lot of guys for as much time as he had in the pocket. The Colts just dominated last week in the trenches. It was really shocking to see them have their way, not only defensively on the line, but offensively on that line. And if they can get a repeat performance here, would not be shocked to see them win this game outright. The question mark here is Andrew Luck obviously has not been good against Bill Belichick. More interceptions than touchdowns in his career in their matchups. He's got to avoid the mistake. And as great as he is and as good as he's going to be, I think he's going to be, you know, a legend in this game. He tends to make the bad throw from time to time. We saw it again at the end of the half against Denver last week, just a really, really bad throw. He's going to have to use his legs more this week. I think that's going to be a huge element that he is going to have to incorporate again back into this week if they want to have a chance. The secondary was phenomenal last week. I think New England, again, probably employs a little more of the ground and pound what we saw in their game at Indianapolis, where they basically just dismantled the Colts from box to wire there. So another tough game for me to gauge. If you think this game is going to be tight, and I do believe it is going to be tight based upon, you know, the information, 54.5 feels like a really, really steep number.
I mean, what we've seen in the past, I mean, a game earlier this year in the regular season in perfect conditions, 42-20, I believe, was the final for that game. Last year, of course, the Patriots ran away and hid, but you're exactly right. I mean, if you're seeing money come in on Indianapolis, and that may be the position of the professionals, don't want to say for certain at this point, because I don't think there is a consensus, and I don't think you or I necessarily are in love with either side ourselves, that, you know, Indy's defense is going to have to be the unit that steps up. I don't think they're going to want to get into a track meet. I'd be hard-pressed to believe we'll see a replay of that 35-31 game we saw from New England a week ago. But I asked this question as well, and I know we talked about it a little bit on the number. When you see this price at 6.5, now Indy was a 3-point favorite at home against New England, which basically says at the time of the game, we'll call those team virtual pick 'em. New England 3, 3.5 for home field. Give them 4 for experience. Is this an opportunity where line value shifts in Indy's favor, or do you see it in New England? I mean, which way do you go about just trying to assess the number that the books have chosen to use?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the number seems steep. Obviously, the number seems a little steep, but at the same time, Indianapolis hasn't looked great to close out this season. And that's basically what's been in the minds of a lot of people. Didn't close the season very strong, didn't look impressive in a lot of those games. Even, you know, you play the Bengals, more so the Bengals undoing to me than looking really, really impressive. The key here basically is what Indianapolis has found, and that's a little bit of a ground game with Boom Heron. And basically last week they implemented him on that first drive, putting him out there and you know, catching a lot of balls over the middle of the field. So he's really been a nice added dimension to this offense. But again, if a team doesn't get out to a huge lead here, this under makes a lot of sense to me. Obviously, New England gets behind last week by 2 scores, and they're forced to play catch-up. I don't believe they attempted a run in the second half, in the meaningful parts of that second half. If Indianapolis can stay within touch here and neither team gets out to a huge lead, the under just makes a ton of sense to me at this point.
Dan Heron, you mentioned, obviously we know he's become a key cog for this Colts offense. You look at his numbers receptions-wise, figure that prop total opens around 4.5, and I'd have to imagine somewhere in the mid-30s. How big a role do you think he plays again in this particular game Payne. Do you feel like Indy's got to kind of go away from it? New England's going to do everything they can to eliminate him, like Bill Belichick typically does so well, take away that primary option and force secondary and tertiary performers to beat you?
You know, there's really not other. There's not another option there. And sometimes you got to force feed
Zerline
a guy.
Tipton.
And you got it.
Don't talk poorly about Zerline Tipton, the pride of Central Michigan.
Mr. Tipton, I believe. What's the movie there? What's the movie, Mr. Tipton? What the heck is the name of that movie?
We'll have to dust off the good old IMDb here, but I will tell you one thing. If people are tuning into this podcast listening for our pop culture knowledge, they're going to be sorely disappointed with the amount of nonsense that we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, basically last week, obviously they make Trent Richardson inactive. Would not be shocked to see that happen again this week. So, I mean, he's going to be out there for the bulk of snaps. You got to go with your horse. Obviously, you know, he's helped provide a different element to this team. If he can hang on to the ball, he's going to be, you know, a huge, huge piece of what this Colts team is going to do offensively. And if you want to keep New England off the field, you're going to need him. So, you know, just it's a weird total. This is one of those where there's not a ton of wiggle here. If, you know, it stinks because if a team does get out to a huge lead, we're going to see both these teams just chucking all over the park. But, based upon the information, based upon where this line potentially could have had, based upon who the professionals are at this stage in the game, under makes a lot of sense. 54.5 is just, to me, it's just a, I know we're in a new era, we're in a new time, but it just feels like a regular season total to me.
We're also going to be disappointed. Mr. Tipton comes from one of your favorite movies, My Cousin Vinny.
My Cousin Vinny, there you go.
Your Italian brethren are going to be a little bit disappointed in you not being able to call off that movie on the podcast without the help of IMDb. But, yeah, you talk about the total. I sure didn't go through my entire Rolodex of movie characters that I have at my disposal. So the Internet tends to become a useful tool when you do these type of exercises. When you talk about the Indy-New England game, though, and you mentioned the total, no real strong opinion for me. I mean, I think the playoff interest here definitely makes it, you know, you shade it towards the under. You're going to see some money coming in that way. As we've seen, the 54 starting to disappear, 27 on the first half. But I've still remained, unsure of which side actually makes a whole lot of sense here. I just don't know if Indy's ready to rise up to the occasion for their third straight week. And you look at the Patriots, they put together a poor performance last week against Baltimore as far as covering the number, and they've definitely been disappointing against the spread. 3-9 against the number, actually. Since 2008 as playoff favorites, so New England's not making any money there. But the Colts, you know, road playoff woes on the road in general, not the most dynamic team, and it'll be a question if they can match New England's physicality in the trenches, something they did, I think, exceptionally well last week in beating Denver.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll reiterate this for the people that didn't get a chance to listen to the podcast last week, which is all of you. You know, I'm not giving out advice if I'm not going to the window with my own cash, and you know, it's different than a guy on ESPN who's basically just picking a game straight up and, you know, without any repercussions for losing or giving out bad information. So it's tough for me to say go bet something that I haven't actually bet on myself. And at this stage of the game, I do not have a bet on either of these games. The closest thing that I potentially could be moving on here is the first game we talked about, is Green Bay-Seattle, and looking under in that game, first half, full game, maybe split a full wager in between on both of those, first half and full game. But other than that, not a ton that I'm seeing this week. And just because it is, you know, the conference championship games doesn't mean that, you know, provides a huge edge. So I have no problem sitting this one out, this weekend out. But that's where I'm closest to right now is looking at that under in the first game.
Yeah, and I would echo those same sentiments. I don't think either of these games offer a ton of value. We talk all the time at great length, so sometimes the NFL playoffs are going to give you opportunities that the regular season doesn't, because books are forced to overreact to results the previous week. I don't think we've been given those opportunities with four elite quarterbacks here, all capable of putting their team on their back and carrying them through. Obviously, we didn't think we were going to see Indianapolis here, but I don't think anybody's surprised that Green Bay, Seattle, and New England are three of the other four representatives with a chance to punch their ticket to Glendale for the Super Bowl in 2 weeks.
No. Not a huge surprise. You know, obviously Indianapolis, big win last week. That might be the lone surprise. And despite that move last week, as high as 10 at Chris, there was some differing information, and that we've talked about this In the divisional round, a lot of differing information, which has been different than the last few years with the playoffs. The last few years, there has been a lot of one-sided agreement from many of the sharpest bettors, many of the sharpest groups. It's basically a lot of numbers that I felt were really off, and we talked about one of those games before we came on the podcast, and it was the Ravens-New England a few years ago where, you know, a game opened 7.5, and we made it 3.5, and it's just basically, you know, run, see, bet. It has not been the case, and it just hasn't been the case in this year's playoffs, and a lot of disagreement with professionals on Indianapolis and professionals on Denver last week. So a lot of these games have had split information, and for me, when you kind of tally up the charts, for me, looking at a lot of the information going opposite ways, the information's been 3-3, you know, 3 to one side, 3 to the other side, and for me, it just makes more sense. I've saved money sitting on the sidelines, saved juice doing so. So I have no problem doing that again this weekend.
Yeah, I think it definitely makes sense. I know I caught a lot of flack for my Pros versus Joe's tweet regarding the Indy-Denver game. Tweeted all the information on Saturday, said that Indy was a side of the professionals at +7. Wake up in the morning, +8.5. Number continues to climb. And a lot to be said for folks that there are professionals. It's a question of who moves the market, and one of the things that we pride ourselves on is not only getting the best of the number, but being able to share where the market may go on a lot of these games. And every now and again, it does happen to the best of us. Payne, one last thing that I wanted to close with before we bid our audience farewell. Futures. You have four teams left. You're looking at Seattle. Let's call them +$1.15. New England roughly 2-1. Green Bay a shade under 6-1. And the Colts about a shade under 8-1. Do you ever find value with only four teams remaining in betting into a futures market this late in the season?
I think everybody knows my feeling on futures. Not a huge futures guy at this stage in the game. For me, though, you got to look at basically the look-ahead line for the Super Bowl, and I've seen AFC, NFC. See, NFC favored at this stage. I've seen -2 some places. I've seen as high as -3 other places. For me, I think the Patriots at 2-1 probably present the most realistic value here. And that would probably be the way I would look at this stage in the game. Obviously, I'm probably not going to invest on any of these. Not a huge futures guy, but my gut tells me, despite some of the information going the opposite way, that I kind of like the Patriots at least advancing this week. And getting a 2-1 price seems realistic. Obviously, a lot of these futures, we talk about them and rolling over some of the prices. So the Patriots might not present a ton of value that way, but if I had to pick one of these with a realistic option of winning the Super Bowl, 2-1 seems the best of the bunch to me at this point.
And I will say for folks who are looking to consider some of the futures, these numbers, courtesy up to the minute, Thursday afternoon on 5 Dimes, projected Super Bowl openers, of course, subject to change. Green Bay listed as a 3-point favorite at +105 against the Indianapolis Colts. You'd have to lay a quarter if you wanted to back the Colts. New England, a 1.5-point chalk against Green Bay, if that was potentially the matchup. Seattle against Indy, the largest number that we'd most likely see. Seattle, a 6-point favorite. And Seattle, actually, sub-3, a 2.5-point favorite, -$1.20 against the Patriots. So definitely factor all of that stuff into the equation when you're considering maybe looking to invest in a future at this point in the season.
Yeah, looking at those numbers, looking at those look-ahead numbers, you know, I like the Patriots there if you can get 2-1, and that's roughly what it is right now, looking at 5 Dimes, looking at Pinnacle. They're right there in line at that 2-1 price. So gun to head, that would probably be the one I would pick if I had to bet a futures at this stage in the game.
No doubt about it. As far as those listeners tuning in, man on the other end of the line, Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. Make sure you tune in through social media. We'll announce our remaining podcast schedule, maybe add an additional podcast breaking down some of the props for the big game in addition to the game analysis itself. But with only one game remaining, Payne, it's been one hell of a ride. And again, I want to apologize to all the listeners who are anxiously awaiting that key information for the divisional round every now and again. Technology, not the friends of you and myself.
Yeah, it's been a great season. Get to talk Super Bowl next, so looking forward to that. And as it pans out, it looks like everything is going to be a go for next season. So looks like we're here to stay.
Unfortunately or unfortunately, depending on who you are and depending on what you listen to, and maybe some plans for other sports along the way, but let's tackle the NFL first and foremost. Best of luck this weekend with all your conference championship selections, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.